This is Ridgely speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Coming up later this month will be a major Democratic Party caucus in Lake County to be able to select a new township trustee. To tell us more about it, we have Lake County Democratic Party Chairman Jim Weiser with us. And Jim, thank you for joining us in the program today.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, tell us a little bit first about North Township, some interesting things that maybe residents don't always know about politics, because this doesn't happen very often, does it? There isn't often that you have to fill the vacancy of a township trustee, but you have that opportunity coming up.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of a rare situation, but of course it's a result of Frank Mervan, who was the North Township trustee, being elected as our new congressman from the 1st District and replacing Pete Biskowski, and therefore his position as North Township trustee needs to be filled. And pursuant to the state statutes, it's the obligation of the eligible Democratic precinct committeeman in the North Township to make that replacement, and it's my obligation as chairman of the party to schedule a caucus for that purpose.
This was a much different situation, I know, than past caucuses and past opportunities to fill a vacancy in a public office because of the coronavirus pandemic. Will you go into a little more detail for us as to, first off, the issues that you and your colleagues with the Lake County Democratic Party faced in trying to get the caucus set up? Once, of course, you knew that Frank Mervan was going to become a member of Congress, and at first of the year, certainly, when he was actually sworn into office.
You know, the COVID-19 executive orders from the governor have placed a number of restrictions on certain events being held. Obviously, it would appear that we're subject in a sense to those guidelines and those orders. So it became quite a challenge to think how to actually physically and practically hold the caucus. And just to explain to the listeners, mm-hmm. North Township is comprised of the communities of Whiting, Hammond, East Chicago, Munster, and Highland, the totality of those five communities. And I believe when we, this weekend, we reviewed the eligible precinct list, and I believe there are 142 eligible precinct committeemen that can vote mm-hmm. in this caucus. So trying to hold an event with that many people, which exceeds the governor's guidelines, has been challenging to say the least. But what we have concluded, number one, is that the caucus will be held on Saturday, January 30th. It'll be held at the Hammond Civic Center, and that site was chosen as, you know, maybe not only the largest structure in the North Township, but maybe one of the largest structures, if not the largest, to hold folks in all of Lake County.
Right.
And it has separate and distinct rooms, as well as the gymnasium and the balcony and all of that. So we're working. In fact, several of us are going to the Hammond Civic Center tomorrow afternoon to walk through and determine how we could do this in a safe and socially distancing manner and move forward. The complicating factor from my perspective is, it's not like a vote for, let's say, a reorganization meeting if we're voting to select the chairman of the party, where the vote doesn't necessarily have to be a secret vote. This, by law, has to be a secret vote. It isn't one we could do virtually or by Zoom or by Microsoft Teams or something like that.
Right.
It has to be a secret vote. So I think we've got a pretty good handle on it now, and right now that's what's going to take place.
Now, since you say you have more meetings coming up here this week, and probably, well, I'm sure we'll probably have updates here before the actual caucus takes place on the 30th, what kinds of ideas do you have with knowing that all of that space is available to be able to divide up, in turn have a place for everybody to meet and be able to consider, as they should in secret, who's the new trustee is going to be?
Yeah, our thoughts, several of our thoughts are, one, we won't call the actual meeting to order till about 9:30. Mm-hmm. However, we'll start registration at 8 in the morning, and we'll designate which organizations are to come and register at which times. So we will keep it to a minimum amount of people that would be in a queue that would be stacked, so that they could easily socially distance. We'll have them check in. We'll assign them to specific areas separate and distinct from each other, so that there's never more than 20 or 25 people in a given area that, again, will provide for social distancing, masking, all of the requirements that we have to, that I believe are required of us to be in compliance with the governor's orders and the CDC guidelines. And that's pretty much how we will then, and we will then conduct it.
Mm-hmm. I know usually a caucus is given an opportunity for people who are running for particular seats that will be up for the vote later to kind of talk about themselves, express their views, maybe offer up some kind of a platform if they have the time to do so. But with the pandemic, and if you have the have to spread everybody out to be able to consider it, how can you at least give the committee men and women an opportunity to learn more about the candidates who are going to be on the ballot when they consider them, so to speak, on the 30th?
We're working with the IT people in the city of Hammond, and our own folks, and the intent is to set up a central area,
right,
or a central broadcast area, and then have it arranged kind of in some kind of a fashion where they could make their statements, I could conduct the meeting, and they could make their statements such that everybody would be hearing it. By connecting it on a laptop to those various venues in which the committeemen are located.
So maybe it might be like a special Zoom meeting where you have everybody together and yourself as the moderator, or at least as the person who's in charge. And this in turn, they might be able to sit on their laptops wherever they may happen to be assigned. They get a chance to see that, and that's their opportunity to kind of understand what the particular candidates have to say.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly, say no doubt, it's the most unusual caucus you probably ever had to conduct as not only as the county chairman, but probably involved in Democratic politics.
Yeah, I would have to say that's the case, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting a lot of thought into this to do it so that practically everybody has the same opportunity and the same information that they would have had if we were all in one all at one venue and at one time, but yet being in compliance with the guidelines that we find our and in compliance with the environment in which we find ourselves today. So we think we can get it done, and we think we get it done safely and effectively and legally by doing what we intend to do. But it's all going to begin with that. Mm-hmm. Work a walkthrough tomorrow and meeting with the IT folks from Hammond.
Okay. Now, as we speak here on Monday, we know that there are a few people who are already interested in being North Township trustee. Who are some of these people that are interested? Because there's still an opportunity, I guess, coming up until almost at least earlier in the week before the caucus actually begins. Fill us in on people who are interested in running for the office, so to speak.
Sure. Folks who have expressed an interest to me, who have directly contacted me and advised that they intend to be candidates for North Township Trustee are the following people. Adrian Santos, who's the current city clerk in East Chicago. Marcia Novak, whose husband is on the North Township Advisory Board, and Marcia is the chairman of the Highland Democratic Precinct Organization. A young man named Tavell Grant, who has no background or political background in the Democratic Party, but is an employee at the North Township and is a pastor, I believe, in East Chicago. Anna Mamala, who's a former school board member in Hammond, a precinct committee woman, and of course comes from a very famous and longstanding Democratic Party in Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
Horace Mamala was one time the North Township trustee. And finally, Lisa Salinas Matanovich, who is a current North Township Advisory Board member. Those are the individuals who have contacted me indicating they intend to be candidates.
And as we know that there's going to be an opportunity, I guess, until the Wednesday before the Saturday caucus is the deadline to be able to show that you're interested and put your application in?
That's correct. It'll be 72 hours before, and that would be the Wednesday before, so that'd be like the 27th, I guess, of January. They would have that opportunity to file, and so we don't know if, and I certainly don't know, if there are other interested parties out there. There may be. It's a very, very important position. I know it isn't always seen as, that way, but in terms of the work that the township trustee does in terms of providing for folks in need, folks who need rental assistance or need food assistance, need housing assistance, that's critical. It's a critical position, so there's obviously quite a bit of interest in it.
Well, Jim Weiser, thank you for spending the time explaining things in detail about what's coming up for the January 30th caucus in North Township to choose a new township trustee. And we hope that, that everything goes well, even though it's a very special and very unusual situation that you all are dealing with this time. The best of luck to all of you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
That's Jim Weiser. He is the Lake County Democratic Party chairman. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Abby Omodunbi is an assistant vice president and economist for the PNC Financial Services Group based in Pittsburgh. And he joins us every month to give us an economic outlook here, not only across the country, but around the state and Northwest Indiana in particular. Abby, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Well, glad to be back.
First, give us an idea, at least on some of the latest job numbers. What is your takeaway on that? And also the employment situation, not only regionally, but nationally.
Sure. So, Chris, so today's job numbers were worse than expected. We expected a gain of 50,000 jobs, but the U.S. economy lost 140,000 jobs in December. Now, this is the first monthly job loss since April. So the U.S. economy lost about 22 million jobs in March and April last year. This was due to the national lockdown and the restrictions on economic activity. Mm-hmm. So what we've seen from December's job numbers is we're seeing the impacts of the second wave of this virus, the resurgence of the pandemic. And we've also seen restrictions in economic activity in many cities and states. So the restrictions were seen in previous months, in recent months, are more targeted. They're not national, so it's just targeted in various cities and states around the country. So in December, we saw about 500,000 jobs lost in leisure and hospitality. We also saw job losses in private education, but there were gains in construction, retail, and manufacturing. So regionally, the Northwest Indiana economy is still below pre-pandemic levels. So regional data is released with a lag, so we most likely wouldn't get December's numbers till the end of this month. Mm-hmm. But the most recent employment reports for Gary, Indiana Metropolitan Division, which includes Lake, Porter, Jasper, and Newton, shows that the labor market has been making improvements, but it's still well below pre-pandemic levels.
Now, since we have a wait, I guess, to get more complete numbers, though, what seems to be PNC's outlook for the regional and the U.S. economies as we go in through the year?
Right. So, I mean, just looking back at what we experienced in 2020, Chris, we experienced the sharpest downturn since the Great Depression, but we've gained a lot of ground since then, but we're still well below pre-pandemic levels, both nationally and also regionally. So looking forward, PNC Economics expects weak growth in the first quarter of this year in the U.S. due to the record high coronavirus caseloads. We've seen restrictions in economic activity in various parts of the country and targeted lockdowns, as I mentioned earlier. But again, we're going to see weak growth in this quarter and then much quicker growth next quarter as we start seeing the effects of the fiscal stimulus and hopefully as vaccination levels increase. So regionally, it's unlikely that we return to pre-pandemic levels till early 2022. The Northwest Indiana economy is very manufacturing intensive. Industrial production is still below pre-pandemic levels. The capacity utilization of the steel industry is still below pre-pandemic levels. So it's going to take till at least early 2022 before we return back to pre-pandemic levels regionally.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask if there's any clue, and at least you have any prediction, perhaps, or at least from the numbers that you see and the trends, as to when you think that both economies, local and national, are going to come back to normal.
Right. So, yeah, so, I mean, our forecast is for the U.S. economy to return back to the pre-pandemic level by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. It's going to take till at least early 2022 for the Northwest Indiana economy to return back to pre-pandemic level.
Now, we know that economics and politics are not supposed to be bedfellows, but it seems sometimes that they are. And with with all of the things still happening as a result of the elections from last November, and in particular with the recent Senate runoff elections in Georgia, and maybe even the impact on we've seen here even in, from because of the chaos on Capitol Hill, should we expect any major policy changes coming from the results, especially of the Georgia runoff election?
Right, Chris. So it is clear now that Democrats will control the Senate in 2021. Now, what this means is that it's very likely that we're going to get additional stimulus. So this will be stimulus in addition to the bill that was passed a few weeks ago. So about $900 billion was passed in fiscal stimulus 2 weeks ago, and this was aid targeted at households, small and mid-sized businesses. So there was the Paycheck Protection Program, which was also included in the stimulus. And then there was also aid for universities and vaccinations. So like, it's extremely important for vulnerable parts of the U.S. economy to get as much aid as possible so that we have a full and strong recovery. So folks that work in the airline industry, in restaurants, and tourism, you know, they all need as much support from the U.S. government in order for us to have a strong recovery. Now, something to note is that Treasury yields are extremely low, so the U.S. government can borrow money for 10 years for just about 1%. So mm-hmm. It's an opportune time for the U.S. government to pull out all the stops to ensure that we have a full recovery. So Democrats controlling Senate makes it very likely that we will get additional stimulus. It's too early to tell if there are going to be any other policy changes, but additional stimulus will be a welcome boost for the U.S. economy.
Well, of course, that's going to be the subject of future conversations in the months ahead, too. And Abby, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Chris.
Abby Omadumbi is an assistant vice president and an economist for the PNC Financial Services Group. Hillary Powell is a name and a face who's well known here in Northwest Indiana. She is a former reporter for Lakeshore PBS. She used to be on Lakeshore News Tonight. And since then, she has gone on to other assignments. In particular, she is now the a reporter for WFYI Public Radio in Indianapolis, as well as Side Effects Public Media, which is based out of Indy. And she is also a journalist for the Associated Press, based in Washington, D.C. And it's in her capacity working for the Associated Press that we are talking with her today. Hillary Powell was one of the people who was assigned in Washington, D.C. last Wednesday when the storming of the U.S. Capitol took place. But I understand, Hillary, first off, thanks for being with us on the program today.
My complete honor. It's my joy because the region is a familiar place to me, and I loved my time there. Thank you so much for having me as a former colleague.
Well, tell us about your assignment with the Associated Press on Wednesday. Where did they send you, and what did you happen to see then?
Always really about talking to people, not just people in power or, you know, official voices. I wanted to talk to the people who had made their way from around the country to the nation's capital. I was out in the streets of D.C. in the Golden Triangle area, which other people outside of D.C. might know as Black Lives Matter Plaza, really mm-hmm. close to the White House, and just a center, the epicenter for a lot of free speech, people having their voices heard throughout the last year. On this particular day, Wednesday, I was out so early because the night before there had already been calamity in the district, and that was to the tune of a lot of pro-Trump supporters were out talking to, having their voices heard.
Right.
And they came into contact with the Metropolitan Police Department from the night before. I was in the area, and I could already hear them clashing with the local law enforcement. There were some confrontations, some police officers on bikes, possibly some pepper spray that had happened the night before. So when I arrived at Black Lives Matter Plaza Wednesday before the rioting happened, there were already signs that the police wanted order. There was yellow tape up. Some of the protesters, they had not become rioters. Some of the protesters were already asking, why is the police tape up? Why are you protecting Black Lives Matter Plaza? They kind of had a tone and a mood already as mm-hmm. to why are police in Black Lives Matter Plaza. So that's where I was. And, you know, I tried to talk to a lot of people who were waving their memorabilia, their Trump 2020 and Trump 2024 signs. Some of them had Stop the Steal signs. Of course, I wanted to know automatically, where are you coming from? Some people, because I was in riot gear to protect myself, including a hard hat, you know, a shield because we are in a pandemic. Also had on some gloves. Also had on my bulletproof vest that said press because I wanted the police to be able to identify me as well. And, you know, some people wanted to speak to me. Most people didn't want to. They're mm-hmm. curious as to what you want to ask them. But people came from all over, Chris. They were from North Carolina. They were from Michigan. Some Ohio people. Didn't see any Hoosiers at the time when I was speaking, but Texas, Arizona, people, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, people were from all over, and they were really excited at the beginning of the day to just be there. Everybody wanted to see the president.
Was it mainly that, just the fact that President Trump was going to be speaking mm-hmm. at the rally was primarily, along with just the feeling that they must have felt they were in some kind of very important moment?
Correct. They wanted to be there in the nation's capital for what they felt like was a last hurrah to save their president, mm-hmm. to save whatever he has instructed them to do to secure what they thought was his appropriate win. So they were just so excited to see the president. People had their Starbucks cups and, you know, their rally gear. So that was the mood at the beginning of the day. I started to see it toward the afternoon descend into more people like heckling me, asking what I was doing there. What side was I on? Obviously no side. There is a, you know, an ethics to being a journalist where you're there to cover history, to make sure history is captured in that moment. So that's what I was doing. And it's always really the most important and exciting part of my job to actually talk to people on the street. So that's what I was trying to do.
Now, you mentioned that when you came in earlier in the evening on Tuesday that there had been confrontations with police and with some of the folks that were there, I guess, coming in early for the rally the next day. There already were some bad feelings that were coming about at the time. Did it even occur to you that it might extend on into the next day, into Wednesday, beyond, not even considering them storming the Capitol building?
There was no thought that there would be a storming of any sacred sites in D.C. Why? Because we know from protocol from the summer before that the National Guard was called in on demonstrators ahead of them even arriving in the city. I know because I was here last summer, and the National Guard came before people across the country came. They were stationed at places like the Lincoln Memorial or wherever there were historic sites, and they arrived there before the people arrived on foot. So, and Metropolitan Police Department has a history, again, of also being in place. The district has a history, according to what I've seen and covered last summer, of having a district-wide curfew in place, warning people that if you are out on the streets, you will be arrested or in violation of that curfew. Mm-hmm. So that is probably why, you know, as reporters, we were thinking there would be some sort of similar shutdown or call to action, which is why it was a little startling to realize that they were going into the halls of Capitol Hill, which is a public space, Chris. But even as a reporter, I am made to go through a metal detector every time I enter that space for, of course, the safety and security of our lawmakers. So you are allowed to enter the building, at which you will be going through security. And obviously on Wednesday, that is not what happened. Mm-hmm. It was not orderly at all, and it was meant to cause disruption.
We're talking with Hillary Powell. She's a former Lakeshore News Tonight reporter here for Lakeshore PBS here in Northwest Indiana. And she's currently working with Public Radio in Indianapolis and with Side Effects Public Media based out of Indy, as well as being a video journalist, actually, for the Associated Press based in Washington. Now, Hillary, do you think that in the days ahead coming up to the January 20th inauguration, we're liable to see tightened security, to be sure, and some things that maybe will turn out different this time than past administration changeovers, like in this case here between the Trump to the Biden administration?
It appears that the world will be watching, just like they watched on last Wednesday. And in the hours since that riot, we have seen, you know, the mayor calling for order for inauguration, for the safety of the district's people. You know, she has an emergency order in place that at any time she could call for a curfew. The curfew that she called last Wednesday was very short notice. Mm-hmm. It seemed reactionary because perhaps, you know, she thought that there would be a federal response to those areas, including the U.S. Capitol Police. She thought perhaps they had it handled. She said she needed her officers in hotspots around the Capitol. I would consider Black Lives Matter a hotspot. That's where they were. That's where I was. So she has an emergency order in place that she could call for a curfew at any time. I think, you know, we should hopefully see more of the National Guard for inauguration. It seems like the city and the architect of the Capitol and federal authorities are still trying to hash out what we will see as far as the physical presence of both people celebrating, people demonstrating, and law enforcement. It still has to be worked out over this next week. But, for example, I know a lot of the stores around my area that I live in are closing early mm-hmm. already in preparation of dissent and, you know, anger and possibly outrage, similar to what we saw on Wednesday. I know that some of the doctors and some of the, you know, the city, people don't realize the city is affected by these actions. So people in their normal day-to-day are leaving their jobs early or closing down offices for a period of time because they don't want their personnel out during all of this unrest.
Now, Hillary, it may be a little early, but your editors with the Associated Press may have some ideas for what you will be doing here in the days ahead. Have they let you know that you may have some assignments back in Washington on Inauguration Day?
Certainly so. We've been preparing for this for as soon as November 3rd ended. Our eyes looked toward inauguration. And, you know, being that this is one of the first times since, I believe, President Adams that a sitting president says they will not be attending inauguration, that changes the trajectory of maybe it being celebratory. So we are planning, and I am interested in talking again, as always, to the people. It's always about the people and how they're feeling. I know people are excited to see Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. The people I've been talking to for a story I'm working on are excited about the historic nature of her rise. So I'm excited to talk to a lot of people from Howard University who are excited that they have a Bison and an alum that will be in the White House. Members of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, of course, Vice President-elect Harris's sorority. So there is that, let's not forget that there's celebrations happening, but there's also people wanting to hear their voices heard on the other side. All I know is that I will continue to be wearing my gear that will keep me safe while I'm trying to talk to people and get their voices heard.
Hillary Powell is a reporter for the Associated Press based in Washington, D.C. She's also a public radio reporter based at Dimes in Indianapolis with assignments there, as well as with Side Effects Public Media, as well as being a former Lakeshore PBS reporter as well. Thank you for spending time with us to talk about what you were doing on Wednesday night, the night that the rally that you were attending that devolved into rioting, at least in Capitol Hill. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It's always my honor to return to the region. My heart will always be there in a way, so I thank you so much.
That's it for the program today. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you'll join us tomorrow.